Now, delighted to introduce Roger, who's one of the founding members of Tyneside Stop the War Coalition. It was set up in 2001, now called Newcastle Stop the War Coalition, and currently chairperson. Roger.
Thanks, Pam. Can you hear me, everyone?
Yeah.
Good, good. Well, just carrying on from the previous talk Alex gave, I think there are three major issues about Britain's warmongering agenda connected with, firstly, the current activity of the government today, secondly, the NATO exercises this year and what that represents, and thirdly, what NATO is preparing for the future, and the state and states itself is increasingly talking about building its political alliance as well as its military alliance. So some recent examples. In a recent keynote address on July 15th, the Defence Secretary Ben Wallace suggested that the British government might learn from Turkey's military intervention in Libya. And this was mainly a speech designed to justify the British government's development of new forms of warfare, including the recent signing of a £65 million contract with the US monopoly General Atomics to build Britain's first three Protector drones. And the Ministry of Defence is reportedly poised to purchase a total of up to 20 drones. And the Defence Secretary approvingly spoke of Turkey's capacity to deploy drones in Syria, where he termed the Assad regime and claimed they suffered heavy losses, including 3,000 military personnel. And the British government or regime is an active supporter of Turkey's intervention in Syria and Libya. And of course, there is no acknowledgement of the criminal role that Britain played in the destruction of Libya, the assassination of Gaddafi, the destabilization of North Africa, and the same in bombing of Syria, with millions of refugees coming from both of these countries. Then, of course, it's better known about the support for arming the Middle East, particularly Israel and Saudi Arabia, which Alex has just talked about, and their wars against the Palestinians and the Yemenis and so on. But as you know, this is the latest pronouncements, but there has been a continuous war drumbeat coming from the government during the whole coronavirus pandemic, although you would not have known it about it from the Westminster debates, even from the opposition, and certainly not the monopoly-owned media. And Britain, as partner with the US and NATO, has ramped up its warmongering rhetoric against Russia and China in particular. And this rhetoric is in the context of its less well-known continuous military exercises when the world was struggling to come to terms with this pandemic. Throughout the spring and summer, numerous military exercises had been planned under the umbrella of US Defender Europe 2020. Defender Europe 2020 is a US-led multinational exercise, and it's the largest deployment of US-based forces in Europe in more than 25 years. Even though it was scaled back, Defender Europe was a huge war-based logistics exercise. For example, 14 air and seaports in 8 European countries were used to stage incoming equipment. Another 13,000 pieces of equipment were to be drawn from the army's pre-positioned stocks in the Northwest Europe and deployed across 18 countries for training. The exercises were a test of capabilities of the European infrastructure, roads, bridges, train routing, etc. In January and February, the British Army moved large numbers of troops and heavy equipment, such as the retooled US Abrams battle tanks and the US Bradley fighting vehicles, into Belgium and from west to east into the Netherlands and across mainland Europe into Poland, as well as transporting and servicing all the Apache attack helicopters and Chinook helicopters. It demonstrated one thing, that the British Army's new role was one of welcoming, transporting and servicing the US Army and its equipment and soldiers right across Europe. And if I can just show you this image. I can find it. Can you see this image? What is Defender Europe 2020. Well, it gives you an idea, because I know there's a lot of talk about Trump wants to pull troops back from Germany. And there's contradiction, obviously, between Trump in the military itself and so on. But this this official sort of plan shows you very clearly that they want to make Britain very, very, or Europe rather, very, very easily occupied by the US, and Britain is playing the main role of transporting the whole masses of troops and equipment around Europe for this exercise. So that's the so that's the situation. But in March, although there was these exercises were descaled, in March, with this so-called Reduced Europe Defender exercise, was carried out in the Black Sea in Russia's backyard, a massive naval military exercise, with standing the whole NATO maritime group, SNMG2, it's called, warships, and of course Britain and the US was ever present in those. In May, in a significantly hostile and provocative move against Russia, for the first time since the end of the Cold War, a US-British naval task force conducted maritime, so-called maritime security operations for 5 days in the Barents Sea on northern border of Russia. The force consisted of the British frigate HMS Kent and four other US warships. They were supported by two electronic warfare aircraft, Poseidon Missile Forces, Air Forces, RC-135. Anyway, the US Naval Force Europe announced that these warships held the maneuvers with a fraudulent claim to assert freedom of navigation. And on June 3rd, four US Air Force B-52 nuclear bombers conducted a mission in which they flew over the Arctic Ocean and the Laptev Sea off northern coast of Siberia. The US Sixth Fleet commander, Vice Admiral Lisa Franchetti, confirmed that these were not peacetime friendly exercises, but spoke using wartime references, claiming that they were countering Russian claims, and that it's more important than ever that we maintain our steady drumbeat, those are her words, of operations across the European theater. And all of the NATO military reports, if you read on their sites, mentioned that Russia has the world's longest Arctic coastline, 7,000 miles, and gets roughly one quarter of its GDP from activity in the region. So this emphasizes why the US and Britain and other NATO powers are menacing Russian territorial waters, not happy that peaceful trade should continue in the region, and confronting the Russian Northern Fleet outside its own base in northern Russia at Murmansk on the Barents Sea. Then, on June 7th to 16th, Britain alongside the US and other NATO countries took part in the annual Baltic operations maneuvers called BALTOPS, with around 3,000 participating troops from NATO countries. This year, BALTOPS took place according to the claim that it was exclusively at sea, with a naval exercise that started in the Baltic Sea, which borders Russia. According to the reports in this exercise, NATO deployed 29 warships and 29 strike support and electronic warfare aircraft. Where no threat exists, the reports are also made, there was a fraudulent claim that the exercises were to demonstrate international resolve to ensure stability and, if necessary, defend the Baltic Sea region. On June 2nd, they claimed to have carried out on their first intercept of a Russian military aircraft off the Baltic coast. Well, you have to understand that the Baltic coast is where Russia actually is actually on the coastline. It's one of their, it's the Kaliningrad is a city which is actually on the Baltic coastline. And what's so strange about Russians having military aircraft off their own coastline? Also, two of the countries in the Baltic, Sweden and Finland, are not in NATO. Although Sweden does participate in the NATO exercises. There was also another NATO maritime exercise called Dynamic Mongoose, concluded on Friday the 10th of July 2020 off the coast of Iceland. And there were submarines from France, Germany, Norway, the United Kingdom and United States, trained together with surface ships from Canada, Norway, the United Kingdom, the United States, and NATO maritime patrol aircraft that supported this exercise. So this, all of this is rather ironic considering Britain's exit from Europe. There are, of course, NATO alliance divisions between the EU countries and the US, but increasingly NATO is openly taking on a political role as well as a military role. I know they've always actually had a political role. Pam mentioned it, you know, that it was a political role because it was it formed against the Soviet Union, but it's never been openly stated, and now they're openly stating this themselves. In an article by Manlio DiNucci, Voltaire Network, he called NATO was at the helm. He said NATO was at the helm of the European foreign policy, and he gives his views on the June 27th NATO defense ministers gathering, which they held by video conference. Of course, this conference was not reported. And all these decisions were dictated by Washington, he says, and were all signed off. And there were three major decisions made there, although we don't know the details. But firstly, they'd mobilized 500,000 soldiers in Europe, Stoltenberg says, who's the general secretary, to deal with COVID. But he doesn't clarify, to deal with the COVID second wave lockdown. In June, this is. He doesn't clarify how he knew there was going to be a lockdown, or how NATO knew there was going to be a lockdown, and does not say what the soldiers will be doing in this lockdown. So this is a role outside of the military role. In the report, the second major problem the defense ministers underlined, they said, comes from Russia destabilizing and dangerous behavior, in particular from its irresponsible nuclear rhetoric aimed at intimidating and threatening NATO allies. He says in this way, he says they overturned the reality, erasing the fact that it was NATO that extended its nuclear forces and bases close to Russia, especially the United States, after the end of the Cold War. A strategy aimed at creating growing tensions with Russia and Europe has been methodically implemented with Washington's direction. The defense ministers also met in a nuclear planning group chaired by the United States upgrade their nuclear measures against Russia. It's unknown what the decisions they took, but today Stoltenberg says, today we've decided to further take steps to keep NATO nuclear deterrent in Europe and safe and efficient. He says this amongst other steps, and there's certainly the new arrival of the new US B-61-12 nuclear bombs into Europe. The defense ministers also spoke of another growing challenge, which is that of China. For the first time, they mentioned China as a military threat. Then they pointed out that China is a trading partner of many allies, but that at the same time heavily invests in new missile technology. So they presented Chinese investments in the countries of the alliance as dangerous, based on this premise. And defense ministers updated the guidelines for national resilience aimed at preventing energy transport and telecommunications, and 5G in particular, from ending up in foreign ownership and control. Of course, their system is based on foreign ownership and control. So for that, you have to read Chinese ownership and control. Interesting, the article also talks about its long-term strategy as evidenced by the NATO 2030 project, Bourne project. This was launched by General Secretary Stoltenberg on June 8th to strengthen the alliance militarily and politically by including countries like Australia, and also inviting to the defense ministers meeting New Zealand, Japan, and other Asians in clear anti-Chinese function, he says. So what is alarming is indeed the warmongering drumbeat and pace and scale of these deployments around Russia's borders north and south, west and east, as well as confronting China on its borders in South China Seas, when equally no threat exists. Whilst humanity faces this threat to their lives from the coronavirus pandemic, and they're trying to keep people safe and produce for their needs, such exercises are not only provocations against the people of Russia and China, but provocations against the peace of all countries and peoples of the world. Through NATO and its partnership with the US and the British government, it's binding our country to a strategy of growing hostility, especially towards Russia and China, exposing us to increasing serious risks and making our arrangements on which the same economic agreements rest unstable. People all over the world are demanding an end to the participation in global warmongering. In Britain, the necessity is to end Britain's participation in NATO, bring about an anti-war government that develops friendly and peaceful relations with all countries and peoples of the world. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was, we wanted to give you a clap if we could, Tony. Thank you very much. And you've outlined what we can actually do about it right on there, which is a very, very helpful summary of things that perhaps we can discuss now together. So I'm very well.